Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Good morning and welcome to the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's Hardy. How you doing on this Saturday morning? Thanks for joining, as always, as we will be getting to the show proper here soon enough this morning, including visits from Bill McInerney over at Core Golf, a visit with Steve Connolly from Callaway. Always good stuff from both those guys. So that will be coming up here this morning on the show. To begin things, though, today, want to address a couple of things really having to do with the column I've been writing for 98.5thesportshub.com or whatever the hell our website is. I don't know. You know, you access it via link, most likely through one of our social media accounts. And I started it this year, essentially because I had to, but I wanted to do it too. So it worked out. Just, you know, a few words each week about golf, something related to golf. And I think it was one of my early columns, maybe one of the first ones of the year, I wrote about Tony Romo and how he had no business playing in a PGA Tour event. And I get why it's done. And it brings people out there. And I agree, it is fun to see these guys playing and competing or trying to compete. Steph Curry playing in a smaller event last year was really fun to watch, and I was really impressed with his game, even though I find him obnoxious on the basketball court. But essentially what I did was I said Tony Romo should stick to being in the broadcast booth because he's not going to get in legitimately to any one of these tournaments playing in a Monday qualifier. He's not going to qualify for the U.S. Open. And given the sponsor's exemption at a quote-unquote PGA Tour event that was being played the same weekend as one of the match play events, so the top talent in the world wasn't even there. He finished dead last. You know, it didn't make the cut and finished dead last for the guys who didn't make the cut. So let's keep things in perspective. As good a golfer as he is, and by all accounts, he's very, very good. It's like three levels beyond what he's at and where he's likely to get. For Tony Romo's case, Steph Curry, who knows? He's obviously still devoting the bulk of his time to his NBA career. And when he gets done, you know, we'll take it on a case-by-case basis. But I say, overall, for the most part, if you're thinking that any particular athlete is going to, you know, just suddenly, turn their attention to golf in their later years after they get done playing either football or basketball and then move on to whatever tour they would qualify for, they're not going to. It's not going to happen. And I've asked other people, I've asked Ray Bourque about this on this show. I said, Ray, what do you think about guys who want to go, quit hockey and work on their game for a few years and maybe then go join the Champions Tour? And Ray Bourque, who is a very good player, single-digit handicap, has been for years, Ray Bourque just laughed. He said, it's not going to happen. Stop it. You're not going to do it. Okay. So giving credit where it's due to John Smoltz, who did in fact qualify for the U.S. Senior Open on Thursday. It was a three-way playoff, and I think it was kind of an unceremonious qualification because he did had to go into extra holes, and I think maybe he won it like on the third extra hole with a double bogey or something crazy like that. Like the other guys, like the wheels totally fell off. But John Smoltz, for years, when I used to have this conversation, either with Jerry Trupiano or someone else, they would always bring up John Smoltz. I'm like, yeah, he's good, but still, he's not going to do it. Okay, he is at least taking a step toward doing it. No, he didn't qualify for the U.S. Open. No, he didn't qualify for a PGA Tour event in a Monday qualifier. But qualifying for the U.S. Senior Open? That's legit. So congratulations to John Smoltz. If I'm going to, take a victory lap, as I did a little bit when Tony Romo finished dead last in that PGA Tour event, I have to take my medicine and give credit where it's due to Smoltz, who did qualify for the U.S. Senior Open. So anyway, there's that. And then there's something that I just posted. I don't know if it got posted last night or maybe this morning. But my column for this week, as we are now into June, you're going to find yourself at weddings, barbecues, graduations, whatever. Sometimes with a bunch of people you may not know that well, stuck talking to people that ordinarily you wouldn't be talking to. What are you going to talk about? I don't want to talk about whenever I can. Talk about golf. I don't have a lot of time to play it anymore, but I love talking about it. Obviously, that's why I'm here. So if you do end up talking about golf, I included in my column this week a few what I consider to be fun golf conversations. The first one is the easiest, which is, you know, where do you play? And sometimes it will be phrased in a different way, like, oh, where do you play out of? Which is a sneaky way, Scott Zolak, of asking, do you belong to a private club? Where do you play out of? Like, well, I didn't even know what it meant the first time somebody asked me that. And I think more often than not, they're trying to find out if you're a member somewhere. So I am not, never have been, maybe will be someday. But for the most part, I started answering like this. It was years, probably 10 years ago, I got asked for the first time. And I said it then, but and now I say it loudly and proudly. Where do I play out of? George Wright Golf Course in Hyde Park. It's the closest thing I have to a home course. And I'm not even a member of the George Wright Franklin Park family. They do offer memberships for residents. You can go play, you know, both courses, unlimited green fees for the season. But I don't even do that. But if I had anything that I would call a home course, that would be it. So that's the first conversation you can have with people that maybe you get stuck with at one of these summer functions. This is another great one. And I've had varying degrees of success with this, and you really got to check your audience on this, because it's a version of F, Marry, Kill, which we all know what that is, right? You take three people, one, marry one, kill one. Do it with golf courses, though. So, and think of it in these terms. Three golf courses. You're going to be able to play one of them once. That's obviously the, okay? For the Mary, pick a second course for one that you would play every day for the rest of your life, okay? And then for the third one, pick one course that you would just bulldoze, put condos up in its place, right? Like Rodney Dangerfield and Caddyshack. So you pick three courses. One you're going to play once, and maybe you drop dead the next day. One course you would play every day for the rest of your life. So think about in terms of practicality and accessibility, and then one course that you would just get rid of off the face of the planet entirely. You hate it, doesn't suit your game, whatever. Bring up this conversation with another golfer and let the fun begin. Hardy, you've got a weird idea of fun. Granted, that's a given. So anyway, I wrote a little bit about it. If you have comments or suggestions for a more conversation, share them with me. At Hardy985. We'll do it on Twitter. Okay, as I said, Steve Connolly from Callaway is here. Going to have some good stuff to talk about from the Callaway family. New for 2018. And up next, Bill McInerney, Core Golf, 218 Speen Street in Natick. He joins us next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Back on the show here with us now from Core Golf in Natick is Bill McInerney. He's a co-founder at Core Golf, but he's also one of the most celebrated and awarded golf instructors in the world.
Oh, boy.
How you feel about that, Bill? How's that for an introduction?
That's intimidating.
It's kind of true, though. You got a lot of credits to your name, and you have helped people, not only guys like me, but you know, guys who are on tour who have been your students. You've got students right now who are playing in high-level collegiate programs and are on their way to playing already, you know, like championship golf at the amateur level. So when you speak, I listen, Bill. How's that?
Well, we got a good team over there. It's not just me, trust me. I mean, Dan, Chris, Andrew, they're all amazing coaches, and our mission is to make the game more enjoyable for everybody, and the highest level to make people more money.
Well, I think I think to that end, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, enjoyment of the game. It's like, if you hit the ball better, great, I enjoy it more. If you roll some putts, fine. But maybe the easiest way, and the one that is going to require the least amount of actual, you know, physical work, is course management. And we talked about it briefly a couple of weeks ago, and I asked you to come back in so we could do a full segment on it. Just working your way around the golf course and hitting the right shots at the right time. How underplayed aspect is this of the game?
Huge. I mean, and to be honest with you, the lesser experienced player does it worse. You know, they make more aggressive decisions than a tour player even makes. And I think understanding that and implementing these choices into your game will actually probably make you a better ball striker, or it'll make you a better putter without even working on your ball striking, without even working on your putting, just making better decisions, because it's going to free you up and take a little bit of the pressure off you and help you commit to your decisions more. And in the end, help you shoot lower scores.
I think I told you this a couple of weeks ago, and I remember who it is now. It was a buddy of mine named Scott Hawley, no relation to Chris Hawley, your head coach at Core. But Scott, who was a very good player, he was on the Canadian tour for years.
Yeah, real good player.
Yeah, he told me once, he's like, Hardy, you're not that bad of a golfer. You just make the worst decisions on a golf course that I've ever seen in terms of shot selection and where you're going and even where you're aiming. And he says, I know you know how to, like, line yourself up for the most part. What are you doing? What are you thinking? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's right. I mean, I guarantee you, if you listen to him, you're going to start playing better golf, because you really do have a good golf swing. You have good fundamentals. So.
Well, one of the best lessons I ever had was from another friend of mine named Rob Churchill, who told me, like, a shot to hit one day on the golf course. And it ended up being the right decision. I said to him jokingly, I'm like, okay, Rob, I'm going to do whatever you tell me for the rest of the day. No swing tips, no, you know, move, you know, strengthen your grip. Just tell me what club to hit and where. And we did it for
awesome
the rest of the round.
Awesome,
and it was, oh my God. Talk about a playing lesson,
big
not
time.
About the swing, just picking shots and where to hit them can make a huge difference. So, Bill, how do we do this? I mean, short of going out onto the golf course with an instructor, how do we start in on this process?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I would say probably the worst thing to do is listen to the commentators on TV. Honestly, you know, golf's exciting to watch sometimes, but, you know, the commentators will often say, oh, man, they took dead aim at that pin. That's a rare thing that really high quality players would take dead aim at a pin. So I learned,
unless you're Tom Kite or a student of Harvey Penick, who instructed all of his players to take dead aim. I mean, what are you going to argue now with Ben Crenshaw and
no,
Tom Kite?
And trust me, I love the little red book.
Okay,
but
good.
When he says take dead aim, he doesn't necessarily mean take dead aim at the pin.
Oh.
So that's a big difference. Big difference.
Can I tell you my Tom Kite, Harvey Penick story real quick? Okay. And the way I tell it is only about 10% how it actually went down. But I was watching Tom Kite at the Buick Open a long time ago. This is probably almost 30 years ago, right? I'm a kid, but I had already read the Little Red Book, right? And Tom Kite had, you know, hit it really close to this. And I loved watching Tom Kite because he was little like I was as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, had no business out there, you
He's
know,
amazing.
trying to hit it alongside the monsters he was playing with on tour in the, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s. But he did. You know, he was a top 10 machine, Tom Kite. And he hit it real close on one hole, and he drained the birdie putt, and he's walking, you know, from the green to the next tee, and people are like, great shot, Tom. Nice birdie, Tom. And I said, dead aim, Tom. You know, got my nerve up to say it. And the way I tell the story, he stops, looks at me, gives me the double, you know, finger guns and says, thanks, kid. When really, in reality, all he did was kind of smile and nod and keep walking.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was my moment with Tom
Everyone
Kite.
Everyone perceives things differently.
Right. But in that one instance, okay, maybe going at the pin was the right shot, but a lot of other times, it's not. Taking dead aim at certain spots. So let's start with the tee box. Let's start with the drives. What do most people do wrong in terms of course management?
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes it's just taking out driver in the first place.
Yeah, I would say that it's pretty consistent throughout the entire course. And you take a lesson from Watson and Nicklaus, right? They basically play zone golf as opposed to target golf. They'll pick a zone where they want to hit the ball and where they want to position the ball onto a, onto the fairway or onto the green. So instead of Tom says it great. He says he visualizes field goals. Like you're trying to kick a football through a field goal post. He's really trying to hit a golf ball through a field goal post. And the more confidence, this is what Nicholas said, the more confidence I have, my zones are tighter. If I'm struggling a little bit, I'll widen my zones a little bit. So it's an amazing way to swing fearlessly, and as opposed to aiming at a pin that's tucked front right of a bunker or a water hazard and then swinging scared. You would rather swing fearlessly into a bigger zone than swing scared at a very small or tight zone.
From what distance are you trying to hit it at the field goal post? As the field goal post where the ball is going to land, is it like...
It doesn't matter.
Is it like extra point yardage away from you? It's like...
Yep. So you learn that through trial and error, but I would say I'll give you a great... great story. Well, this is I think it's a great story. You may not think it's a great story.
I'll let you know. Either way.
So when I was a kid, hopefully none of my academy kids are listening to this, but I would sneak out to golf courses on Mondays. And the one thing that happens on Mondays is they take out the pins.
Right.
So, you know, I'm shooting my average score at that time. Say it was like 83, 84. I go out on Mondays and I light it up. Shoot the best rounds of my life. No pins.
With no idea where the hole is.
No idea where the hole is. So what am I doing on every shot?
Just trying to get it in the middle of the green.
I'm aiming for the middle of the green. And sometimes I would miss it and it'd be further away from the hole than I'd like. Sometimes I'd miss it and I'd knock it stiff. But regardless, I hit more greens than I'd ever hit. And I shoot lower scores than I ever shoot. And it's kind of a no-brainer. And again, with a tour player or a better player, as I got better, I would pick slightly tighter zones, but you know, if you're playing a course that's set up pretty tough and you got pins that are tucked right, tucked left, I might choose, say you got a right pin, the pin might be the right edge of my zone, the left edge of my zone might be a tree behind the green, but in that it's somewhere in the vicinity of the pin. If I hit a little bit of a push, I knock it stiff. If I hit a little of a pull, I got a 30 footer. So, and again, it depends on the level. I would advise the really high handicap golfers to literally remove the pin from the equation, okay? And we're talking about more of the approach shots.
Right.
The chipping is also true. So we talked about Brennan Todd a few weeks ago, won the Byron Nelson 2014. He told me going into that season that the biggest thing that he learned leading up to that, and that year he was top 10 in the world in short game, that he, if he short-sided himself, then he would not try to hit that Harrow shot anymore. He'd take a 15-footer all day long, and that eliminated the bigger numbers, and he played amazing that year. He's one of the leading money winners that year on tour, and he just basically learned how to take his medicine. And you're talking about one of the top 10 best chippers in the planet Earth, and he's taking his medicine. And then you got these guys going out and teeing it up this morning, and they're trying to, you know, they're short-siding themselves with a plug lie, and they're trying to aim at that pin out of a bunker. I don't think it's going to happen.
Right, right. Well, and I told you I would tell you, it's a very good story about playing on Mondays at the course. And just like my Tom Kite story, it just needs a little embellishment. So finish the story with this. So I would go to be sneaking off, and the head pro was waiting for me by the part of the gate where I snuck on, and I thought I was going to get in trouble, and instead he said to me, "Hey, kid, nice round."
Nice.
Okay, so that's how you finish the story.
Oh, man.
And then it's a great story, all right?
Jeez, that's impressive.
It's not lying. It's embellishing. That's what we're doing.
I like it.
So let me ask you this, and then we'll get to some stuff about core. But when you're talking about you know, leaving yourself in good positions, a lot of it is avoiding mistakes, right?
Yeah, and not necessarily leaving yourself in good positions, but not leaving yourself in terrible positions.
How do you separate that from having negative thoughts? Because on the golf course, you always want to be thinking positively. Here's the shot I want to hit. But in order to make that decision, you have to think about what bad could happen. So how do you separate thinking about the bad from leaving yourself in a position to where if something does go bad, I'm still going to be okay?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, there's a fine line there. You know, I mean, I think the more you do it, the less bad thoughts that you'll have.
Okay.
So initially, when you're first doing it, you might say, "Geez, I want to stay away from the right side here." But eventually, you stop seeing the right side, and you only start seeing your zones.
Okay.
So you know, there's a discipline that you have to kind of embrace in order to adjust your mindset. But again, the ultimate goal is that you swing into, you make fearless golf swings into a much more conservative zone versus making very cautious golf swings into a very aggressive zone or at a very aggressive target.
Bill, we talked about some of the junior stuff that you do already. Do you get into course management stuff with your juniors and your, I know you've got get into golf clinics at Core. Do you start talking about course management early on in the process?
A little bit. You know, I think it's as the player, you know, initially we're really trying to get them to hit good shots, enjoy the game, keep it real simple. Then eventually we do start talking about the course management stuff. But when we do on courses with our kids, or even if I'm doing an on course with a guy playing on the PGA Tour, I will let them make the first decision. I'll let them hit that shot. And then I'll maybe say, hey, let's, you know, I love how committed you were to that shot, but what would happen if you chose this shot? Let me see you try to hit this shot. And they would try that. And a lot of the times, my intention is to get them to lean towards what I'm getting them to think, and or what I would like them to think. But you really want to have the player always committed to the shot. So you never tell them it's a bad shot. You just introduce them to the new shot, and then they will end up, you know, probably making the decision you want them to make in the future.
And I tell you, when it comes to just hitting balls at Core, which, yeah, by the way, is at 218 Speen Street in Natick, the range now, different tiers, different levels, and you know, these 14 target greens that you guys have out there with the bunkers and all these different spots, you can think about that as you're hitting balls. You can think about, all right, I want to hit it to that green, but instead of looking at that pin, let's just see if I can get it somewhere on the putting surface here and avoid that big bunker in front, or leave myself at you know, maybe at worst in that little runoff area where I can still have a putt or an easy chip up toward the hole. That's the I think one of the best things about your place.
That's why we built the place. I mean, and the great thing is that the people that helped me and that were involved in the building process, they're all great players. You know, Coach Dan's a great player. Coach Chris is a great player. My co-founder Oliver is a great player. So we all had these ideas and this vision for different areas of focus at the facility so that you could hit different shots. But that's one of the amazing things about having the academy at this facility and for the members, is that you literally could take them through scenarios and you're literally practicing hitting greens. And in the short game area, you're practicing what it's like to be short-sighted and what decision should I make in this situation. Or, look, I have a perfect opening into this pin. How would I hit this shot? Would I run it? Would I fly it back there? So it really gives you an opportunity to experience the shots that you would on the golf course, even a fairway bunker, you know,
yeah,
trying to get it over a lip. We have a part of the fairway bunker was designed so you could hit hybrids and long irons out of. Part of it was designed with a huge lip. So, man, what do I do? So it's an amazing experience, not only as a player but as a coach, to be
right,
able to coach these things. Because you know, we talked about it, you know, over a month ago, about you can't just drop a ball on the golf course. You know, you're gonna get yelled at or kicked off the golf course and just keep hitting shots. So here you can do that. It's
unless
pretty sweet.
Unless you're out there on a Monday with no pins, in which case you're gonna hit a great round,
yeah,
and the pro's gonna be waiting for you by the gate.
That's
when
right,
you're sneaking off, and he's
can't
gonna
do that nowadays.
And he's gonna say,
great round.
All right, there it is. We fixed the story, too. Bill McInerney, co-founder, Core Golf, KOHRGolf.com, 218 Speen Street in Natick. Always good to see you, Bill. Thanks
good
for coming
you
by.
Thanks, Hardy. I appreciate it.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Here he is, the constant friend of the Sports Hub Golf Club, Steve Connolly from Callaway, joining us for the first time here in 2018. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Hardy. How are you? Thanks for having me, as always.
Well, yeah, as always, there's stuff to talk about with you and with Callaway, because you guys, you can't leave well enough alone. And things were going pretty good for Callaway. Things were going great for you guys, but now you just got to go and change it up again.
Yeah, we had a pretty good 2017. You know, certainly being, you know, the number one driver, fairway wood, hybrid, iron, putter in golf in 2017 is pretty good. You know, fastest growing golf ball, number two wedge. So yeah, we were really excited. We had a great year last year, but hey, it's the R&D guys never stop. And as they always say, I wish we had another month or two before we could launch this. So there, we have a lot of great new stuff for 2018.
Well, I saw some of the new stuff at the Golf Expo, so I have an idea of what's coming in. Anybody who watches golf or reads any golf magazines have seen what's going on with Rogue. So my first question is, I have an Epic driver in the bag, and I love it. Yeah. And I think it was the first one to incorporate this jailbreak technology. The Epic was like setting records for sales and like taking over guys' bags on tour and everything else. What's wrong with the Epic?
There is nothing wrong with the Epic. It was a, okay. It's a great driver. Good. And it was, you know, I think I said to you last year, you know, once every 10 years, there's that, you know, game changing technology when it comes to drivers. And really this jailbreak is that. And that's what we saw with the Epic, where people get on TrackMan, they got on the launch monitors and saw this dramatic jump in ball speed and distance.
And let's talk about the jailbreak, because we talk about it as though I know what the hell you're talking about. I have an idea, but can you explain it?
Absolutely.
Simply?
So really, you know, what it is there's two titanium bars that are running vertically in the club head. And the idea behind it is we're making it as vertically, the club as vertically stiff as possible. So at impact, when you have a violent impact like that, especially with a driver, fairway wood, hybrids, is the crown and the sole of the golf club are trying to separate. So there's a movement away from each other between the crown and the sole. What the jailbreak does is it really locks them in, so it doesn't allow that crown and sole to try to separate that movement. So all of the energy, instead of dispersing vertically top to bottom, instead all that energy has to go to the face, and that's where we're seeing these huge jumps in ball speed.
Okay, and that's the problem. If the sole and the top of the club try and separate, the energy goes elsewhere. Instead, it's being contained in the face, and that way it's transferred to the golf ball.
Correct.
Okay, I almost get it. Very good. So you had that, though, in the Epic driver.
We did.
So what's going on with the Rogue?
So what we've done is we've actually, on the driver side, we've tweaked it, where it's actually a little different shape. So it's more, instead of the titanium rods that are creating the jailbreak technology, instead of them being straight, they're more like an hourglass shape. We found that actually makes the club even more vertically stiff than in the Epic.
Oh.
So which is transferring more of that energy to the face. And I, you know, I remember talking to our R&D guy who's in charge of woods, and I was talking about Epic last year, and I said, boy, you know, what a breakthrough this is. And he said, I wish we'd had another couple of months, because R&D guys never want to launch a product. They just want to keep making it better and better.
Right.
So this is where they would have gone, you know, if we'd had a little more time. So it's a huge, once again, it's a significant jump in technology, even over the original jailbreak technology in Epic.
Well, I feel this is kind of like, you know, the XR, which a few years ago was a great club for you guys. You came out with the XR 16 the next year, and people with the XR were completely happy. People with the XR 16 were just a little happier. I feel like it's going to be that way now. It's like, okay, this is a big jump now up to the Epic and the jailbreak technology. Everyone who's got that is going to be real happy. And the people who got the Rogue are going to be just that much happier because, like you said, it's just a little more distance. What about the forgiveness?
That's probably the biggest change. It's definitely a little more ball speed than Epic, but the forgiveness is off the charts. So the MOI of Rogue versus Epic is a huge jump. In fact, you know, last year, you know, we have obviously the Sub-Zero version of the Rogue, just like we did with the Epic, which is a much lower spinning driver. And there really isn't a forgiving low spin driver in the marketplace, if you look at the entire golf industry. Now with the Rogue Sub-Zero, is actually, we've created it where the Sub-Zero version with the really low spin is actually a higher MOI, so meaning more forgiving, than the standard Epic was last year. So, and that tells you, and when you look at the standard Rogue compared to the Epic this year, it is another jump in forgiveness. So all those shots that you hit towards the toe and the heel, or not just MOI on the toe and the heel, but also high and low on the face, it's a huge difference in terms of forgiveness.
And MOI, once again, stands for?
Moment of inertia. So it's really talking about how straight the ball is going to come off the club face.
All right. So you've got that really dialed in now with the Rogue driver. Does it translate to the other clubs? Do you have the same technology in the fairway woods and in the hybrids?
And that's really the big change we have this year with the Rogue line is last year, the jailbreak technology was only in the drivers. This year, we have incorporated into the fairways and hybrids. So, you know, what we're doing is, you know, we've been the number one fairway wood and number one hybrid for, you know, a number of years, 5 years in a row. And that's because of the face cup technology that you and I have talked about over the years, where making that club face as hot as possible when it comes to fairway woods, hybrids, and irons. We're now taking that face cup technology and combining it with jailbreak in the fairway wood and hybrid. So you're seeing ball speeds, really the jump in ball speed, say in a fairway wood, is similar to the jump we saw last year going to jailbreak in a driver compared to what people are playing today.
All right, Steve Connolly here from Callaway. Irons-wise, are you guys doing something different this year also?
We do have a Rogue line of irons as well, and it is once again another step in, I think, technology in terms of both ball speed and feel and sound, where in the past, you know, we've been the number one iron for the last 39 months in a row, based on Golf Data Tech. That's really because we've used the face cup technology in irons where we're creating ball speeds that no one else can. The one thing when it comes to that really hot, thin face, if you're looking for ball speed in iron, it tends to be a little loud. So you get that little louder sound. You don't get what people would traditionally feel like is a muscle back or, you know, small forged iron sound, where that really traditional shot that we all thought of, we've all heard 20 years, you know, ago.
Sure.
And so what we've done now is in the new Rogue irons, we have urethane microspheres embedded in the iron, head. What that does is it absorbs all that sound and vibration. But unlike if you want to put foam or you want to put a giant piece of thick urethane in there, you can do that and make it sound a lot better, but you're also minimizing the rebound effect of the face by doing this with these tiny microspheres. So really, if you could picture almost, you know, thousands of these tiny little plastic balls, they move with the face. So the face can actually get that same rebound effect as it does today with any really hot faced iron, but gives you the sound and feel of a forge club.
You're talking about that, like the nice click.
Correct.
You get off of a well-struck, pure iron shot with
correct.
A high-quality iron. So you're going to get a player's iron sound off of a normal, average player type of club.
That's exactly right. And it's, you know, we've actually even added, so we have the pro version of the Rogue, the standard version of the Rogue, and then we've actually created a new one this year, which I think is going to become a new category. If I had to guess, I bet you when you look at the Golf Digest hot list next year, they'll have a new category that'll be the premium super distance iron, which is the Rogue X. So these are stronger lofted irons, slightly longer, but really designed for that player that's looking to get back distance. And, you know, we're not apologizing for it. You know, over the years, there's been a lot of manufacturers that have, you know,
tweaking the lofts on their irons. It's correct. Like, I'm hitting my pitching wedge 140 yards. It's like, yeah, because it's 2 degrees less loft or 4 degrees less loft than the irons you had 5 years ago.
Correct. So this Rogue X iron is the longest iron you could hit. But, like, once again, we're not hiding the fact that it's a stronger lofted, but the way it's designed, we've really lowered the center of gravity so that you're going to create the exact same launch as you would with a traditional 8-iron in this Rogue X iron. In fact, Ollie Snyderjans, one of our on the PGA Tour, was at one of our teaching events, I would say a month and a half ago when I was in Florida. He hit it. He carried it about 265 with a 7-iron. So if you're interested in trying to chase that, feel free. But the comment that I really took from that was he said, it's in the exact same window as my 7-iron.
Oh my
so
God.
It's launching exactly the same as you would want. But for that player that used to hit a 9-iron in their par 3 on number 4, and now they hit 7-iron, they can now hit 8 or 9-iron again.
That's beautiful.
And get that same launch.
That's beautiful. Now, do the polyurethane spheres, do they fall off? Can they be replaced? Do you have to, like, they come in like a shaker can? You can put them back on
We do a lot of testing. I think we do, you know, we spend significantly more than any other manufacturer when it comes to R&D. So we do a lot of testing before it comes out. So I think, I think we're safe. If, you know, 15 years from now, you want to ask me about the urethane microspheres, maybe we'll have an issue, but I'm not worried about it here in the next 10 years.
Can you see them on the club face or are they embedded underneath?
No, they are deep inside the club face. the club head, so you won't see him, Hardy.
Well, I have to trust that they're there.
They're there. I promise you they're there. At least I was told they were there.
Take your word for it. All right, so we got the Rogue Driver. We got the Fairway Metals, the Hybrids, the Irons. We got to talk about the golf ball. I'm seeing the Callaway golf ball more and more on tour. I'm seeing it more and more on golf courses. You know, it feels like it's now kind of neck and neck with you-know-who.
Well, it's interesting. I just saw the most recent golf data tech for March, and obviously we know around here there hasn't been a lot of golf played in March.
Yeah.
Not a lot of golf balls sold, but, you know, from around the country when it comes to Florida and other places, we now have hit our highest market share ever in golf ball in the month of March. March 2018. And that comes down to the Chrome Soft. And, you know, this really started 4 years ago when we launched the Super Soft golf ball, which appealed to a lot of golfers that were looking for a distance ball, but also wanted to have that really nice feel around the green. But Chrome Soft really has changed the game when it's come to tour balls. It's a lower compression tour ball, but the way it's designed, this new one is really what's, I think, really helped us jump to that next level where, you know, we have tour players coming to us purely because they want to play our golf ball. Sergio Garcia said that the main reason he came to Callaway this year was because he was sick of watching other players that he used to hit it past him because of Chrome Soft.
No kidding.
But, you know, technology-wise, the new Chrome Soft in 2018, it has a new technology called graphene, which is... Actually, there's a material, this material called graphene. It actually won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 2010. It's extremely lightweight and extremely strong, and we're using it in the outer core. So we have a dual soft, fast core. What you really want to do for a golf ball, if you're looking for the ultimate in playability, you want to make the inner core as big as possible. But you need an outer core to really give it that control for a tour-level golf ball. And the graphene allows us to make that outer core much thinner. If you take graphene, I'll give you a question. If you took graphene and covered a football field in it with this material, how much do you think it would weigh?
At what thickness?
I would say
just
an
a
inch
layer
worth of thick. Yeah, just layer. An inch worth, an inch
I
across.
150 pounds.
It weighs half of a quarter.
Half of a 25-cent piece?
Yes. So is an unbelievable...
And it makes a difference in the golf ball?
What it allows us to do is make that outer core so much thinner that we can make the inner core bigger. And what that does with a four-piece urethane tour golf ball is we can make the spin separation dramatic. So for you, when you're hitting that tee shot, you want as low a spin as possible, but you want the ultimate spin when you're hitting that flop shot or bunker shot. And between the Chrome Soft and the Chrome Soft X, it allows us to make that spin separation so dramatic because no one else in the golf industry can use this technology.
Oh, I tell you, the mad scientists of Callaway, coming up with the jailbreak stuff, which is, like you said, it's the first real breakthrough. I think that you can call like a breakthrough in club design that we've seen in a while. So I'm glad you didn't abandon it. I'm glad you've tweaked it for the Rogue line, and now it's available in more of the clubs. So it's all good news, Steve.
No, it's great. And like I said, we're really excited. You know, and I think the cool thing is, you know, we've really, especially for everyone here in Boston, we've really invested in the Chicopee Golf Plant where, you know, all of our tour balls are made. And we are the only golf manufacturer in the world that makes every single tour ball in the United States. And for us, it's not only in the United States, but it's in the state of Massachusetts out in Chicopee, Mass. We've invested another $25 million in that facility. So we're really excited about, you know, supporting, you know, the local economy in Massachusetts.
Yeah, you can pick up golf balls and feel like you're at a farmer's market, buying locally.
Correct.
Awesome. Awesome. Steve Connolly, always good to see you, buddy. Thanks for sharing with us all the new stuff. And something tells me we'll be seeing you and talking to you again before too long because you guys, like I said, you can't leave well enough alone. So we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Hardy.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
Just about going to do it for this week's Sports Hub Golf Club. Before we get out of here, we got to do the 19th hole Presented by Deep Eddy Vodka, authentic American vodka made in the heart of Texas. Deep Eddy Distilling Company, Austin, Texas, 40% alcohol by volume. Please day drink responsibly. This week's 19th hole is any number of holes that you can visit after you finish playing Atkinson Resort and Country Club. Now, it also happens to be the site for the second year in a row now of the 98.5, the Sports Hub, Who's Your Caddy Classic, which we'll be playing there next month. But I love 19th holes, places to stop, have a bite, have a drink, that overlook, at the very least, 18 green. You know, we've talked about others here on the show so far this year that have views of, you know, multiple tee boxes and multiple greens. You've got a great view of 18 at Atkinson Resort and Country Club from a number of vantage points. They've got a grill, they've got a restaurant, they have an outdoor area. Great spot to grab a drink after the round. So there you go. That's your 19th hole of the week, presented by Deep Eddy Vodka. I want to thank my guests on the show this week. We have Bill McInerney from Core Golf in Natick. Thanks to Bill for stopping by once again. And also, want to thank Steve Conley from Callaway. Any ideas, thoughts, suggestions, comments for the show, reach me on Twitter at Hardy985. We'll do it again next week, 7 a.m. Saturday, right here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.